This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hello, you're listening to Animal Party on Pet Life Radio with me, your host, Deb Wolf. And today I've got my very special favorite doctor on the show to talk to you all and answer your questions, Dr. Jory Bochnik. Welcome to the show, Dr. Jory.
Hi, Deb.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, okay, I have a question for you that I don't really understand because I remember touring the veterinary college at Guelph. I think you went there. I remember going for a tour there and seeing all the many, many animals who were, you know, on display and having things done to them to demonstrate the different parts of their bodies, particularly a stinky cow. But why can't you all, veterinary doctors, find the mystery, uncover the purr? Why is it still not known? With all the operations and surgeries and tests and what? Come on now. Where is the sound made and what is it for? And please let me know.
Well, if you think about it, cats only want to purr when they want to. And so when you're trying to study them, they just don't feel like doing it. So it's a little bit challenging to find the specific organ. And some cats purr, all the cats have an individual sounding purr sometimes. So we're really not 100% sure because some cats purr when they're mad and some cats purr when they're happy and some cats purr both. It's very similar, for instance, to the challenge of discovering where dolphins, for instance, where dolphins echolocation comes from. We're getting pretty close and we think we know, but it's been intensely studied for decades and it's still quite elusive. So I'm open to suggestions.
Well, I've heard different theories, like that wildcats use it to somehow calm and mesmerize prey. I don't know if that's true. I've heard that it's a healing mechanism for the cat itself, self-healing. That it has something to do with ultrasound frequencies? Is there something to that?
Yeah, I would say we really just don't know. I mean, as I said, some cats, most house cats that I see purr when they're happy, but some of them will purr when they're uncomfortable. Some do it both. So I'm really not sure. It may have more than one use, for instance.
And what about the double purr / saliva all over the person purr? What's that? What's that about?
That's just exuberant.
Okay. We've got a question from a listener.
You said you weren't going to tell anybody I did that. I don't really understand.
Yeah, well, you know. Okay. So we have a question from a listener. And I'm sure you hate this question because it's just so vague. But why is my cat itchy? Oh, my God.
Well, if you think of all the reasons you feel itchy, then just put cat in that sentence. That's why your cat can be itchy. Cats can be itchy because they have an allergy.
Yeah, if I was a person and all of a sudden I started itching, the first thing I'd probably do is take an antihistamine. And if that didn't work, I might try to, you know, track it. Is it always when I wear clothes out of the laundry? Is it always when I'm in the car? Is it, right? Is that what you have to do for the animal too? Or what do you do?
It really depends. Like, for instance, if you feel the cat and it's greasy and flaky and gnarly, well, maybe it's because the animal's got an underlying skin problem. I mean, it can be an allergic-based thing. It can be an infectious-based thing. It can be a contact thing. How many times, for me, if I touch a short, prickly, coated boxer, I break out in hives. And so it can be something they touched. It can be something that they inhale. As many possible causes as you can think of for people, you can get it for cats. And so it really boils down to sort of the investigation of why, when, how, to try to narrow down what you think the causes really are. And then once we've got a bit of a narrower search, then we can start to apply some treatments. And sometimes the treatment can be something as simple as giving the cat a bath, brushing them out.
Well, I found there's a few dogs. There was a chocolate lab who used to stay here who needed an antifungal bath every week, and she was beautiful. But if you missed it, she'd go bald. She'd pick herself raw. She had to be on, what's that drug? Oh, I can't think of the name. The new one. Very expensive. Once a day. It makes you not itch.
Itraconazole?
No.
Probably. Some antifungal?
Apoquel?
Oh, Apoquel. Yep.
Yes, that was what she was on. And then we got her off it just by bathing her once a week with the antifungal. But I'm thinking, you just said you're allergic to boxers. Are you allergic to any other dogs?
It's so the short, prickly furred dogs sometimes make me break out. Not all of them, but whether it's a Bull
Adobe?
Terrier, Boxer, Doberman,
Okay, they got musk. It's
all
an
those short,
oily.
prickly furred dogs
Yeah. They got the smelly
make
musk.
me break
Every,
out.
you know, dog breeds smell different. Like border collies sort of smell like wool, and labs kind of smell like musk or oil, and they definitely have different coats. So people can be allergic to one type and not the others, right?
Yeah, you can be sensitive to one kind of fur, not the
And
other.
the same with your dogs and cats. And your dogs and cats can have allergies like that too, right? Very specific.
100%.
So is there a way to rule out like the itchy dog? Okay, you give it a bath and then you brush it often. And then I would say if it's licking the base of its paws, I might look to something it's eating, right? That would maybe be an indicator for me. But if it's not, if it's just scratching and not licking at its paws, then I might look to something else. How do you figure this out for people? Because there's a lot of itchy dogs out there and cats.
It really is a very methodical step-by-step approach. You've got to look at food, you have to look at environment. And it can be contact, it can be inhaled. So you try to look at, is there a seasonality to this? Is there a family activity related to this? Have we changed our detergents? Have we put carpets in the house? Have we taken carpets out? For instance, I had one family whose Jack Russell had a sort of anaphylactic reaction when they were changing the carpets. Well, as it turns out, the house was quite old and the underpad was made of horsehair. And the dog turned out to be exceptionally allergic to horses.
Oh,
So it
that's a
can be
terrible
quite
trait
organic.
in a Jack Russell. They're supposed to run with horses on the hunt. Oh, no. Oh, that's a fail. Okay.
It was a bit of
Wouldn't
a fail. He
expect
was
that.
also super allergic to hardwood and they heated their house with a wood stove.
Oh,
So I ended up convincing
man.
them to send that dog to her sister-in-law in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And 3 days after arriving in the desert, it stopped itching.
Oh, okay. So sometimes, yeah, sometimes you have to figure this out and you have to eliminate the allergy because you don't want to be medicating a dog for its whole life when it's something so simple.
It may not be, it is a simple thing, but it's also a challenging thing. For instance, if your dog's allergic to grass and trees, then there really is no way to avoid medication so they don't stop pulling their fur out. So you can probably tie it to a season where prior to them getting all itchy, you start them on their medication, treat for that period, and then you can wean them off and see if they're still itchy or not. But some of them are allergic to things through every season. And so these guys unfortunately require their meds. But as you said earlier, there's new meds out there. One of the things I really love about them is their lack of side effects. They don't have the
Okay.
same side effects as some of the older medications we used to
Oh,
work, and they're
used to be
super
prednisone,
effective.
right? They used to put dogs on prednisone
Yep.
for, and sometimes it was just because the owner wouldn't get on the flea protocol. The dog was so allergic, but the owner refused to admit there was a flea problem, and it would be so easy to prevent. Okay, everybody, we're gonna go to break and come back on Animal Party Pet Life Radio. This is Deborah Wolf, host of Animal Party on Pet Life Radio. You know the expression, cats have nine lives? Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Hello! We're back on Animal Party Pet Life Radio with Dr. Jory. Okay, well, we had the watery eyes. We had, this one is, I think, sneezing a lot. Now, I want to go over this again. If there's a change, right? That's what you guys, doctors, want us to pay attention to, right?
Yeah.
Specifically, like if your cat never sneezed before and now it's sneezing a lot, take it to the vet. Is that
Yes,
correct?
something's changed. Something's different. 100%.
Okay. You know, when you talked about allergies and different things, I mean, there's the, you think about what dogs like to roll in, you think about what cats like to roll in, and then, you know, the things we use to clean our houses with, or the neighbor uses to spray their grass with, couldn't be more different, right? All these chemicals and cleaners and things, it could be anything your dog or cat could be reacting to. It's so hard to figure out. But I think about, there's this new perfume out now by Dolce & Gabbana, $100 a bottle, and it's for dogs. Like, you, $100 a bottle to spray your dog with this stuff. You've got to be kidding. You're going to spray your dog and he is going to promptly roll in the mud or something worse. And I just think, you know, put that money to a good spay and neuter, make a donation, get a tax receipt. You don't need to buy that for your dog, do you? That's not the way to go. And he's probably going to be allergic to it.
I don't think they'll thank you.
No. Okay. So we're getting back to our questions for you. Is there anything you wish, you know, as a veterinarian, you wish people were doing, or people were asking you, or you wish they did at home? Anything with cats and dogs that you're just like, why don't the people do this?
They would ask me what to feed their dogs before they went out and bought stuff. Yes.
Yeah.
Diet would be at the near the top of my list. Would be one.
Because would you say most dogs and cats are the wrong weight? Would you say most of them are not the correct weight? They're either, most of them are too fat.
I would say the majority of them are overweight.
Okay. And the feed packets don't help, because it'll say, you know, for a 50-pound dog feed, and it'll say 4 to 8 cups a day. Well, how do you know? Is it 4? Is it 8? That's a big range.
Well, and all the feeding guides on all the commercial pet foods overestimate the amount that you're supposed to feed. They do that because it's safer to do that and let the dogs get too heavy than underfeed them and they get too skinny. So you can pretty much guarantee that every feeding guide overfeeds.
You know, to be fair to people, sometimes I'll get a dog in here that's really underweight and I'll tell the person and they're shocked because they see him every day. Right. And as soon as I tell them that and I say, you need to feed this dog more, he's growing, or that may have been the right amount the last time you saw the vet when he was 6 months old. But oh, did he ever scut? He's way bigger now. You need to feed him more. Right. And they don't mean to do this. They want their dog the ideal weight. Right.
True. I would completely agree with that.
But I'm not sure cat owners want their cats the ideal weight. I think there's a lot of cat owners that are OK with their cats being quite rotund.
I would also agree with that as well, considering we have one cat that my wife affectionately calls Fat Baby. And
that's what I mean.
Happy,
yeah.
With Fat Baby.
Or Pikachu or whatever. And, you know, basketball. So how do you help people see that their pet is going to be happier, healthier, live a longer life if they didn't let it get so big?
It really boils down to just a bit of education. When you talk about how it's harder on their joints, when you talk about how it can promote diabetes, if you talk about how it will prevent liver disease, all these problems that can be both problematic and expensive to manage and treat can be prevented by not letting their pets get obese.
You know what else? Teach them something else. Like, if the only trick your cat knows is beg for a cookie, the only trick your dog knows is bark at the cookie pantry, then that's all. They want to do other things too. That's what I say.
Absolutely. Get them out doing things. Get them out being active. That's what they're built for. So get your dogs outside running around. Get your cats, if they're indoor cats, get them games and things that they can play inside to make them active. Like, one of the things I'll do in my house with my 4 cats is their evening meal is done when we go to bed. I scatter the food all over the main floor. So for them to eat, they've got to find it. So it's an actively hunted evening, keeps them really busy, keeps them really active. They don't sit there and eat all their food in literally 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, that's really smart. And, you know, playing with cats, teaching them commands, teaching them to come when called, teaching them to sit, teaching them to shake paw, teaching them to go through things, teaching them to follow where your fingers or a pointer point so they can jump on furniture or off furniture, teaching them the word off, teaching them to stay off the counter. All this stuff makes your cat able to get your attention without just begging for food as the only thing you do together, right? Stroke and feed, stroke and feed. There's got to be more than that. And I think most cats just write us off, you know, as not worth bothering with, except for stroking and feeding. And so we can be more to our cats.
Stroking, feeding, and changing the litter.
Yeah. So I want to ask you, what about trap, neuter, rescue cats? What about when they come to the vet? And how can people help more with that? If there's people in your neighborhood or people in the neighborhood of their vet, and they think, you know, I like what he's saying about there's a terrible cat overpopulation and I love cats and how can I help? Like, how can people get in there and do something good?
You know, the best thing to do is find your local rescue group who does this and support them. And it's not just donating money. Sometimes it's donating time. You know, everybody's always short of bodies to do some tasks in these shelters. And it's not very necessarily demanding, but having someone who can just clean litter boxes once a week or once a month, even getting in there and actually helping out means that it lets somebody else do something else. You know, the monetary part is definitely necessary because we need to be able to neuter and spay these animals. And a lot of them just are not going to be house pets anymore. It's basically trapping foxes. They're wild animals when they're out. But if we don't spay and neuter them, that's when you see all these poor little kittens in people's sheds and garages and nobody wants them. So if we can spay and neuter them, the population is just, we're trying to mute the explosion. And we're fighting a losing battle, unfortunately.
When you get these cats in, do you give them shots? You must, right? Vaccines?
They almost all get rabies. When they go into a shelter program like that, they'll get rabies. They might get core vaccine, but the vast majority of them will only get rabies and their neutering and spaying, and then they'll be re-released.
And the tip of the ear is taken, right? So that you can
They'll be marked in some fashion, either an ear notch or a tattoo or both.
Okay. And so people listening, if you want to help, get in touch with a local agency that's working on this. The one that I'm working with now is givethem10.org. Givethem10.org. And they should be able to direct you to somebody in your neighborhood that could help. But it could be something simple, like just being a driver, you know, and they're not going to mess up your car. They're going to put tarps down and blankets down and then crates, kennels, carriers with the cats in them. So, you know, they'll be there, other people there to lift them. Like if you can't do lifting, if all you can do is driving, they probably need drivers to take them from the colony to the vet and back again. If all you can do is provide a safe place for a cage for a few days of recovery before they take them to release them, that's probably going to help. If all you got is a bunch of blankets, that could help too, right? So get in touch with it. Givethem10.org.
Yeah. And a lot of high school students need community hours. Well, a lot of these rescue organizations can give you community hours, and you're getting community hours working with great animals. So it's better than a lot of some of the other community volunteering, not saying that any of them are bad, but if you're interested at all in health or animals or medicine, it will give you an introduction into a world you know nothing about. And it's really needed and it's really appreciated.
A world of social justice, a great entry level, and it'll look amazing on your college resume. All right, everybody, we're going to go to break and come back.
Definitely stands out for
me. Yeah. On Animal Party, Pet Life Radio. Stay tuned.
Need the perfect gift for the cat lover in your life? Check out ComfortDiva.com. We have cat-tastic gifts to make you smile, like cat-themed tote bags, kitchen towels, quirky mugs, and stylish t-shirts. For holiday gifts or anytime, ComfortDiva.com has it all. Treat the cat lady in your life to something pawsome and save 20% with coupon MEOW20. Visit ComfortDiva.com today because every cat lover deserves a little comfort. ComfortDiva.com, where comfort meets catitude.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Hello. We're back on Animal Party, Pet Life Radio. And, okay, so someone's asking me, my cat sneezing a lot and talking a lot. Is that because she's sick? All right. Talking a lot sounds to me like they want your attention. No.
Yeah, the sneezing is not normal, and it sounds like they're asking for your attention in some fashion or another. But again, sneezing is kind of like itching. It can, there's a variety. If you could think of any reason why a person sneezes, that's why cats sneeze.
Okay.
And if it's done it for a while, there's likely some underlying issue, whether it's a viral infection. These cats get nasal polyps, but it's something that should be looked into because a normal cat doesn't sneeze a lot.
Okay. Now, I've heard reverse sneezing in some dogs, which is really odd. And I've had some questions about that before, sometimes sent with video clips. So can you explain to people what, because we're talking about sneezing, what reverse sneezing is all about? I mean, you see this dog and it's sort of, you can see all its ribs as it breathes in so hard. And then it exhales and makes this weird sort of a hooting noise. And it does it over and over and over as if it can't quite breathe. And then it shakes it off and walks away like there's nothing. Only to do it again a few minutes later.
Because dogs preferentially breathe through their nose, when that airway gets obstructed, they start doing this sucking in thing to try to clear that airway. Some dogs who do it have these long, soft palates, like these flat-faced dogs like French bulldogs, bulldogs, and things of that nature. And so that palate sometimes gets flipped upwards, affecting how they can breathe. And so they try to suck it back. And they do this snorting sort of combination of snorting, gasping, and horking all at the same time. And then when the obstruction is cleared, they're fine. But some of these dogs can panic because they really want to breathe through their nose, and they can do it, and they're trying and trying, but they're not getting there, and they'll kind of almost pass out. Then they start breathing through their mouth, things kind of settle, and then they're fine again. But it's a temporary obstruction of their airway where they want to breathe.
It's like sleep apnea while they're awake. Weird.
Pretty much, actually. Yeah, that's a very good way of describing it. I'm going to steal that, can I?
Yeah, no problem. It's so strange, though. So strange to watch. So what should people do? I mean, basically, you just wait it out?
You sort of have to wait it out. I mean, sometimes having a cold air humidifier in the room that the dog sleeps in, because humidity helps things flow. And if the dog's sinuses are too dry, then the concretions in their sinuses get too thick and they can't breathe through it. So sometimes having a cold air humidifier in the room they sleep in, sometimes if they're having a bit of congestion, letting them breathe in the steam from the shower for 5 minutes. But in the heat of the moment of the reverse sneezing itself, there's not a lot. Some people advocate covering one nostril, covering the other. I don't advocate either of those. I think dogs sort of just keep them protected and let them sort themselves. Getting your hands near their mouth and nose and potentially obstructing their breathing is both dangerous for you and your pet.
Okay, this brings us really neatly to one of the last questions we had for you. There's a couple more, but this one. I have an epileptic dog. My dog's on medicines to control it, but the odd time there's a seizure. And she writes all this stuff about how great her dog is. It's a 7-year-old golden retriever, newly diagnosed. So it doesn't seem like they've got the meds perfect yet. Okay, so she's asking, she's telling me that her vet said to keep this golden retriever, if she's away, but it's alone and unsupervised, there's no humans home, it shouldn't be with any other pets. And she's saying she doesn't want to do that. She doesn't want to separate this golden retriever from all the dogs and cats he loves and hangs out with. And she doesn't think the vet's right, that if it goes into a seizure, it might get attacked. So this is the question. Is my dog safe if it has a seizure with all the dogs it loves? I would say not necessarily.
No.
I would say do not leave it.
No. Not only is the dog not safe, but the other dogs aren't safe. Like if the dog has a seizure, when they're thrashing, the dog could bite another dog inadvertently. And seizure bites are vicious because there's no restraint.
They can't unlock. I've seen them bite an object while they're in a seizure and their mouth stays in that position for quite a long time. They can't release. They don't even know they're biting, right?
Yeah. It's asking for trouble.
Can you describe to me, like, make us understand what this is like for the dog or the owner when a dog has epilepsy or seizures and how this goes? Because I know there's dogs who come to my kennel who are on phenobarb and other meds for it, and they seem to be managed very, very well, but they are alone when unsupervised. That's a condition I put on it.
Yeah. So there are a couple different medications we use to treat seizures. Seizures are much more frightening for the people watching them than for the person or the dog experiencing them, because they don't know what's happening when they're experiencing a seizure. And then they wake up confused because they don't know what's happened. It takes a bit of trial and error to get medications sorted for seizuring animals, and everyone will have their own criteria for when to treat and when not to treat. Phenobarbital, for instance, is an older drug that we've been using that's still quite reliable, but there are newer medications that seem to work better. The downside on the newer medications is they're a bit more expensive, but they tend not to have the side effects of some of the older medications. And so so for me, I tend to treat dogs with seizures if they're having more than two seizures a month or more than one grand mal seizure a month. And you don't want to be experiencing that anymore. And then I'll get them on medication.
Okay, so a grand mal means if there's urine.
Grand mal means full body, unconscious, paddling, peeing, pooping, vocalizing.
Okay, so there will be a mess left behind if they have one of those. If your dog's just shaking a lot and there's no pee, no poo, it probably wasn't a grand mal, right?
You don't necessarily have to pee and poop, but if they're unconscious, full body tremors, that would be a grand mal. Okay. Petite mal seizures or smaller seizures are generally focal, where the dog hasn't lost consciousness but may have trouble moving one part of their body, or they start looking around and biting at a fly that's not there, or they'll be barking in an odd fashion temporarily and then they're back again. It's these focal, short-lived, non-loss of consciousness seizures that can occur, and they're generally pretty mild. And for those kind of animals, I tend not to treat them for the most part, because eventually, sometimes with some of the older medications, over time, they can become quite resistant to them. And long-term phenobarb can affect your liver and whatnot. So I try to tend to put off treating seizures unless it's absolutely necessary. For instance, I had a Labrador who was epileptic and he'd have two seizures a year. And they were grand mal seizures. They lasted anywhere from 20 to 30 seconds and I never treated him.
Okay. But did you leave him alone with other dogs by himself?
Generally, no.
Okay. Okay. And okay. So some of what you just
described. His seizures almost always happened at night laying beside me.
Yeah, you're smart. Okay. I'll go to the doctor and then I'll have my seizure. Okay. So the things we used to think, like put something in their mouth. No. Right. Just clear the way so they can't fall downstairs or hurt themselves.
Wrap them up in a big blanket so they can't hurt themselves if they're thrashing, and keep everything away from their mouth.
And then how do you tell the difference between that and something that would be maybe caused by ingesting poison or having a stroke where they start to shake and it's not okay to just leave them?
Generally speaking, if your dog's never had an episode like that, it's never okay to leave them, take them to your vet.
Okay, because it could be something else. And okay, and then time is of the essence, right? If it is
always
something else.
Always.
Okay. Okay. And after a seizure, like say your dog had a seizure, and you brought him to the vet, but by the time they got to the vet, it was done. Can the vet figure out that it was a seizure by something? Exam or blood?
So you can usually do it based on the history of the physical exam. So for instance, an epileptic seizure will look very different than an organophosphate poisoning, or it'll look very different than the dog who collapsed because of heart disease, or a dog who collapsed because of respiratory problems. And so what's important is it's a question of ruling out the things it isn't, and leaving you with a tentative diagnosis of epilepsy is important, because that will dictate how you treat them.
So there is no like blood marker or thing you're going to find that says, yep, this is E for epilepsy on this little cat or dog.
Nope, there is not.
Okay. Do cats get epilepsy too?
Yes, they do.
Really? Okay. And I mean, I know the number one reason cats are surrendered to shelters is they don't use the litter box. But what about health reasons? Do a lot of people surrender animals because they need meds or injections or this kind of thing? Does that happen a lot?
I don't see that as often. It's almost always behavioral. I mean, they come in saying, oh, someone's developed an allergy or removing. But for me, on the side of intake and seeing how these animals, the ones that are left, it's very, very rarely medical. It's almost always behavioral.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. And all the behavioral stuff can be worked on, you guys. Don't abandon your animal just because it has a bad habit or two. It's really easy to fix most things.
That kind of goes back to that question of what do I wish people would ask me?
Okay.
I wish you would ask me about the breed you're considering getting before you got it.
Okay, so you mentioned several times today cats with short noses and flat faces, dogs with flat faces, short noses. All right. What's the deal on that? Do people get those not realizing how much extra effort and cost there might be?
Just look at the explosion of the French bulldog. Okay. They can't possibly know what trouble they're going to be getting into because those dogs are just so darn cute. People don't really take that into consideration, but they are walking and talking respiratory nightmares.
So when people look at a big dog and they say, oh no, I can't afford a dog like that. I'm going to get a little one like that. And that I see them make a decision not to get a big mutt who's probably not going to have a health problem till it's a senior. And they pick one of these little high maintenance bred very specifically. And I think, well, that's going to cost you four times as much as the street mutt. So, okay.
Wrong.
So I know this year we had some problems with people trying to fly. And at the last minute, they checked a boxer in here because they weren't allowed to fly in summer with a boxer. So there's that too, right? They're not as safe in the air as other animals, are they?
No, well, because their airways are more potentially compromised, then you run into more trouble. And temperature dependency plays a big role. If the oxygen level is not the same, unfortunately, I have a brother who's returning to Canada, and he has two bulldogs, and they are chartered. There are now airplanes that you can get tickets for your pets that are specifically for flying animals at $10,000 a seat. And he's bringing two bulldogs to Canada.
Where's he flying from?
Sydney, Australia.
Oh, and if you go the other way, you got the quarantine and all the rules. Same with Hawaii. So you got to be careful.
All the rules.
Pet passport, vaccines, everything else. Which brother is this?
This is my youngest, Jeremy.
Oh, Jeremy. Yes. I remember Jeremy from Carpool. Okay. So back on the topic of what do you wish people would ask you? You said you wish they'd ask you about breeds. So clearly you want to warn them against some of these more expensive, high maintenance, short face breeds. Anything else in cats and dogs you want to warn people about?
What I really would like to talk to people is like, write down what it is that you want and what it is that you don't want. Mm-hmm. So if you want a more sedentary dog who doesn't require a lot of work, don't get a pointer.
Right.
Don't get a border collie.
Right.
You know, because yeah, they're popular, but there's a reason that they are bred for particular purposes. And so I would help steer people to breeds or crossbreeds of dogs that are more suited to their lifestyle than what they think they want. Because there's the idea of what they think they want and then the reality of what they should have. And they often are quite different. And when you get them to write down the things they like and things they don't like, it becomes much easier to set yourself up to be successful with whatever pet you choose versus on a whim for Christmas buying a Rottweiler when you live on the fifth floor of a walk-up apartment, don't really like taking your dog for walks and have no time to train them.
Yeah. And even with cats, you know, there's a real big difference between the kind of grooming and care a long-haired cat needs or a short-haired. Huge difference. You could have five short-haired and you wouldn't need to groom them as much as one long-haired, you know, and then there's the activity level and the noise level. Like, I'm sorry, but I don't like a pet that sounds like an unhappy baby. That's not good for me. So I won't have a Siamese because I mean, they're adorable. They do lots of tricks. All power to the Siamese people. But that sets off alarm bells in my brain. I can't sleep with that noise. I think there's a baby in trouble, you know. So for me, Siamese are not it. Now, Abyssinians, if I see a stray cat at a shelter that needs a home and it looks like it's got Abyssinian in it, well, then I know I'm going to try and dangle some toys and see if it's reacting. This could be a cat that'll do tricks. But if you just want a cat that sits around all day, you don't want that one. That one's going to knock stuff off tables just to get your attention.
And I've seen some pretty sedentary border collies. But at least in generalities, we can point ourselves in directions of dog breeds or cat breeds that are more conducive to a person's or family's lifestyle. If you have four children under the age of five, then having a nervous-based dog who requires tons of exercise is probably not the best choice for you because how busy your household is going to be and how reactive those dogs could be to the young people in the house versus a calmer, relaxed dog who doesn't need that kind of activity. You can really set yourself up for success or failure based on your choices. So I really wish they would just reach out to us and say, hey, this is what we're thinking. What do you think? Because we want to foster a good animal client relationship.
And sometimes there's like a thinking outside the box that goes on. I once placed these people, they really, really wanted a border collie and they wanted a trick dog. They'd had border collies for a long time, one after another, and they loved it that this dog was always ready to go and ready to learn stuff and super keen and knew all these words. But they got old, real old, and they still wanted a dog like that. So I found them one with three legs. Perfect. It'll do anything they want. It's eager to please, but it doesn't need to go for a big long run every day. It only has three legs, you know, perfect, perfect, perfect. And then when that dog died, I found them another one. This was a 5-year-old with a little bit of an eye problem. Couldn't see so good and already middle-aged and kind of mellow. Perfect. It was a border collie. Still did all the tricks they wanted. So sometimes, you know, the rescue community has exactly the dog or cat you want, you know.
Yep. It's just knowing what you need, just knowing what you want and then finding it.
And there are loads of animals who are 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 need homes and they're pretty mellow. Their puppy kitten days are long gone and you don't need to think they won't bond with you because when an animal's been homeless or been at a shelter, a clinic for a long time or a dog kennel for a long time, they're so grateful that you took them into your family. You'll never have an animal as grateful as that. So really think about rescue. You know, even if you only have, you think, oh, he's 8 already, I'll only have 4 years. Those are going to be a really good 4 years, you know, really, really good. So it's worth it. You're going to get a lot of loyalty out of that without the destruction of the puppy or the kitten. You know, you can have Christmas without having to hide the tree.
Yep, that's an excellent point. Getting them when they're older really, really helps.
Well, or ex-working dogs. When they've kind of aged out of a program just because they're 5 and they can't work for a proper professional job anymore, they've still got a long life ahead and they're totally trained. I mean, that's even better, right? Yeah, that's good. All right, so Dr. Joy.
It's all about matching the dog's temperament with the family dynamic. And if you do that, you're setting yourself for success.
Yes. And sometimes I think people, they promise a dog to a kid who's 5 till he's 6, till he's 7, till he's 8, till he's 9, till he's 10, till he's 11. Now he's 12. And they say, we're going to get you your dog. They don't realize that at 16, he's going to drive and he's not going to have any time for this dog anymore. So really like think, you know, the kid you think is going to love the dog and take it everywhere with him may have already aged out of this. So you got to really think about who's going to do the poop scooping, who's going to do the walking, who's going to come with you to the vet, that kind of thing. And usually I'd say it's going to be mom. It's going to be mom. So mom gets to choose what dog the house gets. Mom gets to choose what cat the house gets, I say. But then I'm the mom. So, all right, Dr. Joy, what do you say?
I disagree with you.
No? Yeah?
I agree with you. Happy mom, happy house.
But the thing about the kids, you know, you can't expect a 5-year-old to scoop poop, obviously. That's not sanitary. But on the other hand, a 16-year-old, a 17-year-old, an 18-year-old is off to college. So you got to get the dog when the family's the right age, if you're expecting the family to really participate, right?
I would agree with that. But I would also say that if you want to get a pet, get it because you want it, not because you think the family's going to want it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Very good advice. You could always pet sit for a friend and have fun family times that way, or volunteer as a family at a shelter, or go pet cats that need rescuing. There's all kinds of things you can do together that will make a big difference. And if your kids want to participate in trap, neuter, and rescue, oh, that would be amazing. That would be so helpful. They can man a booth, handing out pamphlets, talking to people. I mean, there's all kinds of things you can do to help the rescue world. All right, Dr. Joy, what would you like to leave people with before we go today?
I would probably like to leave you with, before you buy, really think about what it is that you want and what it is that you don't want before you rescue, so you can match your lifestyle with the pet that you want and set yourself up for the beginning of success.
You know, the best dog you ever met and the worst dog you ever met could very well be the exact same breed. It's all about how they were raised and trained and taught and how they fit into your lifestyle. So you can have a very hard task ahead of you, trying to teach a golden retriever not to swim, or trying to teach an intact male fighting dog breed not to fight, or you can have an easy task. You could get a dog or cat that really does suit you. And then all that extra time is spent loving it and pleasuring and having fun and not fighting its nature, just going with it. So I totally agree with you, Dr. Joy. But if you got the wrong dog, or you got the wrong cat, or maybe you got a hyper athletic dog because your teenage son is a marathon runner and now he graduated and you moved out and now you got this hyper dog, you need a trainer. They'll help you out. There's so many ways to exercise a dog, and a tired dog is a good dog. So everybody, don't give up on the dog. Don't give up on the cat. They can be trained. All right. Thanks for joining us today, Dr. Joy, at the Animal Party.
Absolutely my pleasure.
It's been wonderful. All right, everybody. Keep sending me your questions for Dr. Joy to dev@petliferadio.com. All right. Thanks, everybody. Until next time, be good to your animals.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.